Such feedback loops are built into Blecher's model of CEDAW. His view of a self-sustaining, self-generating university community surrounded and nourished by student-led business assumes feedback loops between education and commerce. Another feedback loop forms when students adopt 30 high school students from their home communities, and also they are sponsoring people when they get jobs. So integrative thinkers kit is basically causal model building and generative reasoning. These two things are the things which we talked about now. Causal model building and generative reasoning combine to form one of the most potent tools in integrative thinkers kit. Generative reasoning seeks to build new models that take into account data that doesn't agree with the current models available. Okay? And a tool for forming such models is what is called a radial metaphor, developed by George Lakoff and Mark Johnson, by which one devises a metaphor and builds a model around it. Now, what is a metaphor? A metaphor is nothing but a type of a storytelling. For example, metaphor to describe a business organization. Now, if I tell you, think of a business organization as a family. So we have the CEO who's a head of the family. We got the vice presidents who are the next in line, maybe the fathers or the grandfathers. We have a great grandfather, the CEO, and the grandfathers are all the VPs, and below them we got the assistant vice presidents, you know, who are the fathers or whatever, not like a family visualize. Or you look at business organizations as a market, so you visualize a marketplace, or you visualize it as an army, regimented, where discipline is the main stay, or a sports team, where everybody is playing towards a goal, or as an ecosystem. Now, this is called as a radial metaphor. You take anything, you can create a radial metaphor. So you can take a, say this particular talk I'm giving you, this lecture. This lecture can be taken as a motivational speech, A. It can be taken as a learning, B. It can be taken as a storytelling, C. It can be taken as something else, whatever you want to think of. So the same thing can be seen in different contexts, and for each of them you can have a story. Metaphor is a type of a story which is very imaginative, using all the sensory perceptions, and in the bargain, when the story is being told or narrated, the person gets the input of the story. A classic example of metaphor is the Ramayana and the Mahabharata stories. The values are sown in people's minds through the stories. So the story actually speaks a lot about value sowing. Right? Now, when we go to the next one, the radial metaphor tool helps integrative thinkers in two ways. It helps thinkers conceive of the situation at hand in a way that's conducive to the creating a new model. By having some metaphor, it becomes easier for me to imbibe what I want to imbibe. It helps with the cognitive heavy lifting of keeping a coherent whole in mind while honing the individual parts. These two are very descriptive about what I said. It tells you that on one hand, it says, whatever I want to do, integrative, I can do it. If I want to integrate a value into my child, I need to tell him a metaphor, a story. That's what it says in simple terms. Okay? Blecher's radial metaphor when building the CEDAW model was an organization as a family. CEDAW is nurturing and loving parent, and students are the children who thrive on the parents' love. Blecher is quite explicit about the role love and affection play in his vision of the education. But love and discipline go hand in hand. Students must obey CEDAW's many rules if they want to continue to receive school's love and nurturing. Right? Blecher's causal modeling of the CEDAW can be seen in three levels. Basic level is combination of teleological and material modeling. Why should I educate the people? Why? And why comes to X? If I do X, Y will happen. So back and forth, what do you do? X leads to Y. Why should Y come? Y should come because of this reason. So if Y should come for this reason, then go for X. So it's a X to Y and asking questions why, and then coming back to X. Young people can gain hope and self-worth with education. Basic thing, first level. Second level, dynamic system that takes advantage of the feedback effects between happy, motivated, successful students and the community where they live, work and socialize. That is when they are in the university. And the third level is radial metaphor of CEDAW as a family. So CEDAW is a very nurturing family. It's got all the things that a family wants, love and care. Most of the black students who are studying there came from a social background where they were neglected, no love and care by the society at large. But an organization like this was like a family, and it was also like a society. And where this society, this number of people, Blecher and his team were giving them the love and the affection which they were not getting. So they felt good about themselves. So at the end of it, it becomes a radial metaphor of Siddha's family. It's a place where I feel safe and secure and I feel nurtured. And when that happens, my growth in terms of learning and being a useful citizen takes place much, much better, much, much faster. Causal modeling, you can practice this in three levels. Basic level, which is what is explained here, you can reverse engineer your own models, pick a belief, better grades help a better job. You have some beliefs, X to Y. So first pick up that. If I get better percentage, I get a better job. Or practice, pick up a belief or a practice. Now one practice which is done in every company is calling team meetings every Friday morning or Monday morning or whatever. Do I really need a meeting? In one of the IT companies where I'm doing a regular training, the leaders have been, I've been asking this question, that how many meetings you have in a week? They said we have meeting every day morning, 9 to, depends. In most of the meetings, there is a fixed time of reporting, but there's no fixed time of leaving. It's very sad. So they find themselves wasting their time. So one of the modules I take is time management for the senior managers. And then it so happens that they say, yeah, I have to have a meeting every Friday, every Monday. I said, why? Review. I want to know the status of the various projects. Why do you want to know the status of the projects? If I know the status of the projects, I will know to what I can tell the customer, the client. Now, why do you need to tell the client every day? And such questioning takes place. So when these questionings take place, they have to ask a very simple question, that if I'm holding a meeting on Friday morning, nobody's saying don't hold a meeting on Friday morning, but let it have a meaningful outcome. You know, we create meetings with a outcome in mind. After some time, the outcome is lost and the meetings remain. So that is something that needs to be questioned. Like the 9 o'clock reporting and, you know, casual leave and all that. We need to question that thing. Otherwise, the organization will have a problem. So you can reverse engineer your own models, pick a belief or a practice and break down the causal relation reasoning underlying the belief or the practice. This helps you to recognize how you're already using causal modeling without realizing it and shows how the modeling might improve by being more explicit about it. Right? This is the first step. Basic. Next is what you do? You graduate to interviewing another person to understand the causal modeling that underlies the particular belief or the practice. Once I master it, then I start making it on others. The exercise entails speculating on the logic another person follows to arrive at a particular conclusion, and you'll find this challenging. Like I mentioned, you know, I address some of the people who are decision makers about certain practices they are routinely following. And then when I ask these questions to them as to why this, up to point they explain, and beyond that they get defensive. And then in the worst case of defensive will be, you don't know our company, I know it better. Now I tell them, I don't need to know your company, but I do know your processes from what you're talking. Now, is this process required? So when you hold on to the process and you ask questions, what are you doing in the second stage? You're trying to empower that person to become a causal modeling thinker. It requires a certain amount of communication. It should be told in a manner in which it is empowering and not pulling back. Otherwise, people go into defensive. I can't challenge him very aggressively. I have got to ask questions in a certain manner. So one of the tools is assertive inquiry, which I'll be discussing sometime later. Right? Last is, the most important takeaway from these interview sessions is that it's extremely difficult to build causal model that adequately takes account of human beings and their wishes and dreams. The important thing to be noted is that everybody doesn't get everything he or she wants. But at the same time, I can give the best shot to whatever is available to me by going through all these steps of thinking process. Generative reasoning, abductive logic. Now, when I do these things, this is the best shot I can give, and I have various options. Don't you all agree that when your thinking changes, it removes you from a certain type of a sorrow of a tunnel vision? After some time, when you start thinking the same way that you keep on thinking, does it not restrict your feelings and emotions also? When you go for a vacation and you do something new, you've never done bungee jumping, or you've never done, say, you've never been on a parasailing or something, and you do it for the first time, does it make you joyful or not? So when the brain is occupied with something new, out of the box, it releases a lot of stress. It also makes you feel liberated and you have multiple options. Now, why I'm saying this is that I've seen invariably all the generative thinkers, all the people who are into integrative thinking, invariably they have a sense of a huge optimism and they're always joyful. They're joyful because they know to shift the gears of their thinking, which leads to an emotional base also, into resourceful emotions all the time. We talk about we want to be happy all the time. If you really want to be happy all the time, as a human being and also as a company executive, then learn to be more and more generative reasoning person, more and more integrative person. Because when you think about integration, what happens? Your brain starts, it doesn't get stuck up in one factory setting. It starts moving in different directions. And it seeks solutions rather than getting into blame fixing of people. We need to practice this if you really want to be proactive as an organization, as a human being, and sustain yourself. Right? Causal modeling. The goals in this exercise are threefold. We want you to see yourself as thinkers capable of conscious causal modeling. You must see yourself as thinkers. You are capable. They underline the word capable. I must feel and convince that I am capable. I can't say that I'm not a topper in the university. I've been a dull student. I've not done this. These are self-defeating beliefs. I am capable. One of the three things we talked about the self-concept in one of the earlier chapters. Remember? To understand that your modeling gains power, effect, and effectiveness when you are conscious and explicit about it. I have got to be clear and I've got to state it in so many things that I am capable. It's not an apologetic way of doing it. It is not half-hearted, fully. To practice using the techniques such as systems dynamics and radial metaphors to build sophisticated causal models. The third important tool for the integrative thinker is assertive inquiry. This is something which we are covering now. Integrative thinkers use it to explore opposing models and in particular models that oppose their own. If we defend our model to others, we learn nothing about other models other people hold in their heads. Is it true or not? If I say that I'm the best in what I'm doing, because I've got a track record, because I've got so many certificates, because I've got so many prizes, and people are acknowledging me, I'm a brand to reckon with, and I start assuming, I start really feeling, I even tell people that I'm the best, then what am I doing? I'm shutting myself off from any other models which I can absorb. Right? So we are kept away to any clues that can lead us to a creative resolution if we do this, if we defend our own models. Assertive inquiry, the antidote. Antidote is what? To remove poison, we put an antidote, right? The antidote to advocacy. Advocacy is inquiry. Advocacy means I am saying this, do it. There's a why should you say this? I've got to inquire. If there's an advocacy which says I have to do it this way, then I must ask myself a question, why should I do it this way? If I can put a self-inquiry to my self-advocacy, it's the best starting point. In one of the leadership trainings for a large engineering company, we have a 6-day training in which we lay a lot of stress on advocacy, inquiry, and other four parameters, wherein in detail one goes through it. Right? So the antidote to advocacy is inquiry, which produces meaningful dialogue. When you use assertive inquiry to investigate someone else's mental model, you'll find saliences that you wouldn't have occurred to you and causal relationships you didn't perceive. You'll be surprised, oh my God, people think in this fashion. Take a classroom, lecture is going on. There are 60 students who are in rapt attention, they love the professor. They say, oh, you teach so well. So one student loves the lecture because he is getting something important for his personal life. Another student is there because he is finding the 3 hours really enriching because he has to while away his time for 3 hours. A third student is wanting to really add value and he finds that there is a lot of gaps in what he has, so the professor fills it up. A fourth student is enjoying because he loves the professor's jokes. So we have four students in a group of 60 who could be having different reasons for doing what they're doing. If the professor understands that each one is having a different type of a reason for sitting there, then he knows how to give different strokes for different folks. A. Second is he needs to understand that not all of them are coming for the sake of marks and transformation. They come for different purposes. We all see the one movie together, and all of us have got different. We all like the movie, but the reason for liking is different. That part of it should be understood. The reason why a person is motivated is different. Each one does the same task and is happy, but they are for different reasons they are happy. So you may not want to adopt that mental model as your own, but even the least compelling model can provide clues to saliences or causal relationship that will generate a creative resolution. By talking to many people, in short, you start getting different ideas. Now, when will you talk to many people? You have to talk with what is called as naive listening. Naive listening means what? I may be an expert in my field. Like one of the areas where I do training, I had somebody the other day I met, and that gentleman was talking to about the training which I do for so many years. He says he was talking to me something very very basic. Now I would have looked at him, I would have told him, hey, you know who I am, I'm a master trainer in this. I wanted to pause and take inputs from him. So while I'm pausing and taking inputs from him, one part of my mind will say, hey, you're an expert, why are you suffering this stupid fellow? He's ignorant. No. On the contrary, I said, let me see what he has to offer me. Even the most ignorant person about your subject has something to offer you. Now, only when you are open, you realize he is not ignorant. He is giving you a process, a thinking path which you never thought of. Because he comes from an emptiness and an openness. You are full of yourself. And so, you think he is ignorant, and in the bargain, you stagnate. This is an important thing which some of us are practicing. Right? And you may want to adopt this thing. Now, taking it further, intent here is not argumentative, and its methods isn't to is to ask leading questions or discourage challenge. It involves a sincere search for another's view and tries to fill the gaps of understanding. Seeks common ground between conflicting models. How does what you are saying overlaps, if at all, with what I suggested? Now, you may want to know how it is done, right? Suppose, let's say I have my colleague. Okay. Now, let's say Sachin is my colleague and Sachin is asking a question to me. Sachin comes out with a proposal. Sir, this is a fantastic thing to take up. Huh, is it so, Sachin? Okay, tell me more about it. I don't challenge Sachin. I don't tell him, how do you know it? I don't tell him, I don't try to pull him down. In fact, I want to encourage him. I said, okay, what makes you think this is good? So he says, this is what I feel is good about it. So what I'm doing is I'm asking him questions to explore from what salience and from what causality he's operating. Many, many progressive companies today, particularly certain engineering companies with whom I'm associated, they actually do this. Any executive comes with any suggestion, they ask him to take it further. Till he comes to a point where he needs assistance or it becomes his project. And this is possible when I'm into assertive inquiry with you. You know what happens to you? You start validating yourself. You feel nice that people are addressing your idea, not you. And when I address your idea, how do you feel? You feel nice about it, right? Now, this requires maturity from the other person. So when I'm asking you, when Sachin comes and tells me, this is a project I want, I said, okay, tell me more, make a presentation. Tell me more. So he makes presentation. Parts of the presentation are not to my experience and liking. My linear thinking will say, attack and tell him you're wrong. And I will feel that I'm educating him. But instead I tell him, Sachin, can you give me a rationale behind this? Why do you think this has been done this way? He gives me his rationale. When he gives me his rationale, I come to know his causal modeling. And when I know that, it's a great learning for me. Great learning for me. I thought Sachin is a youngster. He's a novice. He doesn't know things. But his way of thinking is something which I can capture. All this happens in a very comfortable, informal, supportive space. No threats. No judgments. No controlling. No acting that I'm the boss and you're the junior. No. When this happens, assertive inquiry is a great tool. It seeks to explore the underpinnings of your own model. It uses the insight gained to fashion a creative solution of the conflict between other models and your own. It doesn't challenge, but it's pointed. It goes to the right direction. Seeks the salient data and causal maps baked into other models. This is what it does. It promotes generative reasoning and causal modeling. It breaks down conflicting models into pieces that can be recombined into something better. It produces robust causal model by enlisting more minds to explore. It maps the materials and the teleological links that undergird the conflicting models. So many things it gives you. To use this tool effectively, you must not consider clashing models as conflict, misunderstanding or hurt feelings. Instead, treat it as an opportunity to make something positive of the clash and contribute to the valuable resolution. Like I told you, the way we talk to them, the communication. As a professor of communication, as faculty, I use this, one of the topics that I train the students into is through assertive inquiry. How to go about making your workplace happen to you in a very proactive and a positive way. Right? You can learn to use the tool by conducting an exercise. The exercise is termed as personal case and is based on the technique from the methods and theories of Chris Argus of Harvard. The person who has written a lot of papers on organization behavior, OB, Chris Argus, right? You have to select an encounter with your participant that involves clash and ended very badly in egocentric terms. I'll just explain this to you in very short terms. Some clash has taken place between two groups and you make them sit together and resolve it. First step, then they sit together and resolve it, they'll try to give their viewpoints on both sides and there'll be heated arguments. Then you get into assertive inquiry. Tell them to get into assertive inquiry. Why do you think the way you think? And they'll say that I think the way I think because of this reason. So without contesting, without fighting, you put your point of view that I think the way I think because of this background. Both of them are taking stock of their respective saliences and their respective causalities. Now when that happens, they realize, oh my God, I never thought of that direction. The same incident is treated by one team in one fashion and the same incident is treated by the other team in a different fashion, totally opposite. When opposites come, they can collide. But in this case, when opposites come, they merge into becoming a third. I want you listeners who are watching this particular video to also watch a film called Remember the Titans. Remember the Titans is about the American football. Black and white team coming together, they have a black coach. And that movie has got lots of things which I'm talking about here. How the teams come together, they get into assertive inquiry, and then things start happening. Right? Participants in a paragraph or two explain the failed encounter. This is about the process, okay? I'm running through it, okay? You write another paragraph and describe what you wanted to accomplish in the encounter. Recall and record as a dialogue in a play the actual conversation during the encounter. On the left of the dialogue, you have to provide commentary of the dialogue. Last, write in short reflection on the outcome of the interaction. Participants in a paragraph of two explain the failed encounter. What went wrong in a paragraph, they'll explain. Then you write another paragraph to explain what you wanted. This is what happened. This is what I wanted. Second one. Okay. On the left hand, recall and record the dialogue in the play, the actual conversation during the end, what actually happened, actual paragraph narration, and then actual dialogues. And on the second one is what I wanted to happen. And on the left of the dialogue, you have to provide the commentary of the dialogue. What exactly is your commentary of the dialogue? What exactly happened? Last, write in short reflection on the outcome of the interaction. What exactly happened as an outcome? Did the talks fail? Were there clashes? Were there conflicts? Were there some abusive words, etc.? Right? The goal in carrying such an exercise is to diagnose what went wrong in the interaction. Find how parties inadvertently contributed to the outcome they didn't like. Find how could they have dealt more productively. Find how they built from directly observable data higher order conclusions, and find how that the sequence could have ended in a productive resolution. You get a lot of information about how both the parties thought. This actually gives you a resolution which will be a combination of A and B, right? And these personal cases help to see the tool of the assertive inquiry that can get you past the dead end of unaudited advocacy. Unaudited advocacy means advocacy which is pure on that I want to know more inquiry. I want to really know what is it that I'm saying which you are not understanding or misunderstanding. When I know that, I know how to rectify my advocacy in a different direction. I'm giving directions to my boys. The way I give the directions, one youngster feels offended. He doesn't tell me. But through this process, I come to know. He says, the way you talk to me is something I don't like. I know what you're telling me. So that advocacy part of me can change, right? By twining advocacy with inquiry, you can learn how to give your opposable minds a chance to produce constructive resolution out of what seemed at first to be a conflict with no exit. Tools such as assertive inquiry allow integrative thinkers to give their stances force in the world. And experience, as we see in the next session, enables integrative thinker to wield those tools with precision, accuracy, and lasting impact. Right? And now, we come to the summary of this chapter, Leap in the Mind. Integrative thinkers can create something from nothing. To arrive at this creative resolution, they use three powerful tools of generative reasoning, causal modeling, and assertive inquiry. Instead of relying on traditional inductive and deductive logic, they pursue abductive logic to generate a model one has yet to see. They use radial metaphor that helps with cognitive heavy lifting of keeping a coherent whole in mind while honing the individual parts. By twining advocacy with inquiry, they provide opposable minds a chance to produce a constructive solution from conflict that had no exit. So as a conclusion, friends, I just like to invite you, for your own sake, to take up certain challenging situations in your life which have not been resolved so far and go back into the thinking process of yours instead of blaming people and situations, and ask your thinking process, where is it that I have not used generative reasoning? Where is it that I have not gone for causal modality? Ask questions to yourself and then you'll get some answers. Be open. You may need a coach for doing this. Find a coach and make this happen. Because by doing that, you come out of the misery of getting stuck in a situation and being in a dilemma for too long. All the best. Thank you.